This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I mean, it's all, maybe it's a bit pie in the sky at the moment, but it's more likely that this will be a cheap processed meat product for people who can't afford the real version, the traditional meat product.
Cruelty-free products abound in our 21st century marketplace, from cosmetics to fake fur. But can you imagine a cruelty-free filet mignon? It sounds like an oxymoron or the stuff of a wacky sci-fi flick. But as today's guest on Sea Change Radio explains, lab-grown meat is here and could hit the shelves within your lifetime. Tom Levitt, British food and farming journalist, recently chronicled the latest innovations in the lab-grown meat industry. At this point, we're talking about a $300,000 5-ounce hamburger, which begs the question, if and when this is actually developed to scale, will it be highbrow fare or protein for the poor? Is this lab-grown meat a viable solution to the significant environmental impact of the global appetite for beef? How do animal rights activists and vegetarians view this potential development? And more to the point, what does it taste like? Will people really eat it? Listen as journalist Tom Levitt tries to answer my litany of questions and gives us a sense of whether lab-grown meat is a realistic alternative or just a meat pie in the sky idea. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Tom Levitt. He's a food and farming journalist, and he has a new article about synthetic meat that appears in this month's Earth Island Journal. What's the Beef, it's entitled. Tom, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex.
You profile mostly Mark Post in his work in this article. Can you first give us an idea of coming away from his presentation on synthetic beef production? Whether you were more optimistic or a little more skeptical after viewing Professor Post's presentation?
He's quite endearing, I have to say. Having met him a couple of times before the presentation as well, he's very enthusiastic and he's a good communicator. And I think that's part of the reason he's had quite a lot of success in the publicity he's got. He's managed to convince a lot of people that what he's doing can work. And he managed to convince, you know, Google's, Google co-founder. So, you know, he must have something about him. So although I tried to take a sort of, you know, unbiased view to analyze lab-grown meat to try and put an objective view across, I would say that he was quite convincing in his presentation and in the event as a whole. So
what has he done?
What's he done? Well, basically, he's made a very expensive burger without using an animal. The science behind it is quite complicated, and I would say to people, if they're interested in it, they should definitely not take my word on my sort of quick description of how he's done it, but sort of read up on it. But basically, he's taken a small sample from an animal, and he's essentially stem cells, and then he's basically fed them some nutrient, fed them some food, if you want to just say it. They've grown. And he's, in effect, exercised them. And again, you know, this is why I say you should read up to find more. But essentially, to put it simply as possible, he's exercised them and turned them into muscle tissue. And then he's done that many, many times and created lots of muscle tissue to create the meat, which you and I know and can eat. It's early days. So what he's done at the moment is he couldn't create a piece of steak, you know, a pretty piece of steak. He's essentially created a kind of mesh of muscle tissue, which really you can understand why he's made it into a beef burger, because you can mix in other flavors. You know, he's mixed in a bit of egg and something to make it taste a bit more palatable at this stage, because this is very early days in terms of the technology and how it's going to develop. So he's basically created a simple piece of meat, processed meat.
And why don't we take a step back and tell us why there is such a rush and why there's such competition to create lab-grown meat? Where is the need?
Well, the need is in the fact that meat is a massive drain on resources. It uses up huge quantities of water. It uses up huge quantities of land, if you think of those grazing livestock, and if you think of the feed that's growing in fields to then feed to them.
To quote your article, it says, according to one estimate, about 28% of Earth's land is used to feed or raise livestock, with around 60 billion farm animals housed, fed, and slaughtered every year. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then you the article also mentions the amount of water that it takes to produce one beef burger, and 2,400 liters of water to produce one beef burger is pretty humongous. And obviously that doesn't even take into account the water that you're using to grow the grain, or even to, sorry, that takes account of the water to grow the grain and feed the cow, but not to wash all the equipment to process that burger and to slaughter it. So it's a very intensive, resource intensive industry. So resource intensive is one part. Mm-hmm. The second part is greenhouse gases that it produces. Yeah, it produces a lot of methane. And there was quite a famous study from the Food and Agricultural Organization a few years ago, where they estimated that livestock accounted for 14% of emissions. They've revised that slightly in their more recent estimate, but essentially it accounts for a large amount of the greenhouse gas emissions that are being put out into the atmosphere. So resource intensive, lots of greenhouse gas emissions associated with it. And then the other side is, of course, the animal welfare side, which obviously to eat an animal, eat some meat, you have to kill an animal. And a lot of people don't approve of the way we raise and kill animals.
And you mentioned how while most of the work has been concentrated on beef, there have been some studies that have been funded by animal rights groups to try to replace pork and chicken as well. I think chicken in particular was one that was funded by, was it PETA?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they're probably one of the most prominent organizations in favor of lab-grown meat. And for them, they call it cruelty-free meat. So they want to find a way of ending animal slaughter, essentially. And particularly, they see the poultry sector as particularly harsh animal suffering sector. So they have put a funding, I think it was up a $1 million prize for the first scientist to come up with an alternative to poultry. And they've also, as you mentioned, they funded a researcher, Nicholas Genovese, at the University of Minnesota. The reason why the focus has been on beef at the moment is, I don't know if people might not realize, is that beef has the biggest impact. It takes the most water. It needs, you know, cows need a lot of energy to produce the meat. They're not really the most efficient. Beef is not the most efficient way of producing meat. You know, chicken and pork has low energy intensive, lower land use, lower water in comparison to beef, and lower methane emissions as well. So that's the reason why there's been a focus on beef to start with.
And because of its global popularity, replicating beef from a holistic standpoint is kind of the holy grail for these lab-grown meat experiments. Is that fair to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, they also, it's no coincidence, they chose a burger as well to do their initial presentation on, because obviously it's quite eye-catching to create a lab-grown beef burger.
It's also something that you taste usually with bread and condiments, and it's not like as pure a meat experience as slicing through a big steak or something.
Yeah, exactly. At the moment, initially, as lab-grown meat develops over the initial stage of the next 10, 20, 20, 30 years, it's going to be focused on processed meat. It's going to be an ingredient, essentially. Think of it more. I mean, one of the ways they describe it, some of the researchers working on it, is you can almost think of it like flour. It's just going to be sort of an ingredient that you use, and a protein ingredient that you use. They're not going to be able to develop a perfectly looking, you know, chicken or a steak in the near future anyway.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to food and farming journalist Tom Levitt. So Tom, you mentioned that from the outset that Professor Mark Post has created this very expensive burger, and I guess this 5-ounce sample that he presented to the media was, apparently it cost $300,000 to produce. And one of his, I guess a competitor, is a U.S. scientist, a Hungarian-born scientist, Gábor Forgács, who said it was ridiculously expensive. But when I read that quote, it seemed a little specious to me, because obviously these things are going to be way out of line with a market when you're first coming up with something. I mean, the first computer cost ridiculous amounts of money, and it stunk compared to my iPhone. So obviously these things start to scale, and as more and more iterations of them come out, the cost plummets. Don't you think that the cost for these initial things is kind of a non-starter? It's really about getting the product right.
I can understand that point. I mean, the point Gabor would make is that there has to be an element of viability there. And I think he was questioning how viable what Post was doing was.
Well, he also had said that he thought it was so expensive that it was going to suppress future funding for it because it was so expensive, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's also speaking on behalf of the lab-grown meat. Although Post got a lot of attention for his burger, as a whole, funding for lab-grown meat isn't great. Researchers are struggling. There's not a lot of researchers doing it, and those that are struggle to get funding. So Gabor is someone who has had some success. He set up his own company, Modern Meadows, to try and develop lab-grown meat, and he's had funding from also quite a decent number of people, including the USDA. But I guess his point would be that we need to create a viable product that investors will want to help develop, because it's all very well having a philanthropist to support your product, but you need real investors to bring it to the market, I think is essentially his point. And he didn't think that Post Burger really provided that viable product that people would support in the development stage.
So he didn't think it was as replicable, like it was a little too labor intensive?
Yeah, essentially it's a little bit too expensive. It's not really viable at the moment, whereas his own work.
Yeah, why don't you focus a little bit on some of the other projects that have produced lab-grown meat, like Gabor's?
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot. I mean, I don't know if anyone knows, but the first kind of recognized lab-grown meat product was actually funded by NASA, where they created some kind of fish fillets when they were thinking of it as a possible space food. When they did a tasting session somewhere in France, I think it didn't go down particularly well. But yet they never funded it beyond that. And then after that, there's been just bits and bobs. People have sort of produced small samples of meat, and I think a few people have taken them to TED conferences and they've presented that, including Gabor. I think last year or the year before, he produced a bit of meat and he ate it. It was just a small bit of meat. It wasn't an entire burger.
But it also didn't cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. But now this is the interesting thing. Whereas Post has managed to produce a burger, Gabor hasn't done yet, because Gabor stepped back a bit and he's focusing on a lab-grown leather product first, because basically he can't get enough interest in lab-grown meat, enough interest in terms of funders, and then he's kind of also worried about public reaction. So he's sort of holding back a bit on the lab-grown meat. He's going to create and develop lab-grown leather first, which he says is a similar technology. So by developing lab-grown leather, he'll learn a bit more and it will help him develop lab-grown meat later. But he's holding fire a bit.
I got to work on these pots a little bit more. It makes me so mad, I don't know what to do. Thought I was a hub instead of a maid. Like old red chili or something, all of them got dried up on these pots. You'll never fix me none of this good food. Wait till that woman get home when I'm scraping all these pots up. I've done your dirty dishes. How much am I supposed to take? When I left, I had cornflakes for breakfast. Now there's a bone from a T-bone steak. Too many dirty dishes in the sink for just us two. You got me wondering, baby.
With you.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to food and farming journalist Tom Levitt. So, Tom, we know that it's edible. Not only did Gabor eat his at the TED conference, his little strips of lab-grown meat, but some media members or food tasters were allowed to taste this very expensive 5-ounce burger that was presented to them by Mark Post. What kind of reviews was it getting?
I think probably as good as Mark Post, Professor Post, could have hoped for. They didn't vomit it up. they essentially said it tasted close. I think the exact quote was, "It's close to meat, but not that juicy." And I think that there was a couple of tasters there, and that was seemed to be the unanimous view, that you looked at it and you thought it could look like meat. You tasted it and you thought, it tastes almost like meat, but it just wasn't quite as juicy. And I think what Post said afterwards was that he's still going to try, that one of the big areas they need to work on is to make it a bit more juicy. They're thinking about adding blood and other things to try and make it a bit more meat-like.
So he says in 20 years you'll be going into a supermarket and you'll see both lab-grown meat next to traditional animal products right next to each other. Do you think that's realistic? And I'd be interested in your take from in Europe, how you think it would fly in countries where things like GMOs have been banned for several years and there's a little bit more of a different aesthetic, let's say, in terms of approach to cuisine, especially in countries like France.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of obstacles to overcome before lab-grown meat could ever appear on our supermarket shelves. And actually, Mark Post himself thinks that the first region of the world where this might appear would actually more like to be Asia than it is to be Europe or even the US, which is interesting.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider how Asian cuisine tends to use meat in just almost as a little topping, and it's sliced thin, and it's not the feast that Americans can indulge in when you drive across the country and you see, eat a 72-ounce steak and it's free. You won't see that in an Asian truck stop, for example.
No, and I mean, it's also just a simple fact of cost and resources available, because for him, he sees that the rising demand for meat in Southeast Asia is coupled with the fact that there isn't a lot of water and land available there to rear what we've just described earlier as very, very resource-intensive products, namely beef.
Are we talking mostly about beef when it comes to Asian palates, that the expense is mostly in the beef area, or is it similar in pork and chicken? I thought it was mostly beef that was kind of jacked up in price in Asia.
Yeah, it's like in price, yeah, but I meant in terms of quantity eaten. Obviously, pork is obviously the most popular meat by far in China, but they are eating more beef as well. So, but for, I'm sure there will be lab-grown pork products developed. I mean, he even said in the press conference, you could create a lab-grown version of any animal, basically. So, I mean, we're talking about pork, beef, chicken, or any of the sort of the key protein meats. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he can see that it might take off there first, because the cost, if they can get it, I said it costs $300,000, but in the long term, obviously, they want burgers to be able to cost the same or more likely to be less than a meat product, if we assume that meat will rise in price because of a constraint on resources in the future. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of Europe, who knows whether it would, there are a lot of obstacles, you know, no one's asked. I mean, there's been a few public polls and people have been kind of, you know, not massively against, but not massively in favor. So it's difficult to know whether consumers accept it. Supermarkets would obviously have to stock it. And then there's obviously a big farming lobby. What would the farming industry think about an alternative to grazing livestock and traditional livestock farming? And then there's the meat industry themselves. You know, will the meat industry accept lab-grown meat, or will they see it as a threat? So will they embrace it? Will they see it as a threat? That's interesting to know.
I'm guessing that they'll see it as a threat if it becomes cost competitive, and they'll try to bury it any way they can. Have you spoken to any beef industry execs about their view on the future of lab-grown meat?
I haven't. They haven't really engaged with the topic yet. I think they probably see it as very much an early stage product that is not really, they're quite a conservative industry, the meat industry. So, I mean, Mark Post himself has said that he is trying to engage them and trying to get them on board. But at the moment, they're just, it's not something, they probably see it as something that, oh, this is not going to come for 20, 30 years. We've got a lot of other things we want to look at before then.
And they have a cash flow business, which is producing revenue for them. It's kind of like trying to engage big oil companies in alternative energy. It's like they have to look 20, 30 years down the road, and most of these executives won't even be working at these companies in 20, 30 years. So it takes a visionary.
There is also another angle that which for Gabor Forgax particularly is quite keen on talking about, which is that rather than this being sold in supermarkets, he actually kind of imagines a home brew industry where people have the equipment to actually make and cultivate, if you want to call it, cultivate meat at home.
That's a really cool idea in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and so you could sort of choose your ingredients. If you like, oh, I like a bit spicy meat, I want to add a few more of these nutrients, you know, I'm a bit low in that, so I'll add a bit more of that. And you sort of create your own personalized meat product. I mean, it's all, maybe it's a bit pie in the sky at the moment, but that would obviously negate the need for supermarkets to an extent, or traditional supply routes anyway.
Sure. I think that sausage would be a easy place to start beyond ground beef. That ground beef, you know, really that feel of that meat is something that meat eaters are quite used to, and to replicate that is so tough. But sausages and hot dogs, that would seem like, I mean, these are, I always joke with my friends about hot dogs and things like that being meat of unknown origin. It's because we don't even like to think about how the sausage is made. But you would think that the sausage and hot dog arena might be worth pursuing. Has there been some efforts to produce a lab-grown hot dog?
Not yet, but I'm sure that will come. I mean, like you say, it's the control. It's giving consumers a bit of control back over their meat supply, instead of thinking, oh, is this, what label does it say? Is it ethical? Is it come from a free-range farm? You know, what's been the conditions? Have I led to, you know, a huge amount of resources being used? Or, you know, where's it come from? Has it come from some strange far-off country? You can actually have control. You know where that meat's coming from because you've made it in your kitchen. You know, that's kind of quite a powerful, powerful future.
Tried to amend my carnivorous habits, made it nearly 7 or 8, losing weight without speed eating sunflower seeds, drinking lots of carrot juice and soaking up rays, but at night I'd have these wonderful dreams, some kind of sensuous treat, not zucchini, fettuccine, bulgur wheat, but a big warm bun and a huge hunk of meat.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to food and farming journalist Tom Levitt. So Tom, let's talk about the ethical conundrums that lab-grown meat presents. You had mentioned that PETA is one of the few animal rights organizations that's actually supporting the efforts to grow meat in a lab environment. But then there's organizations like Greenpeace that's saying, you know, this is really distracting from the real solutions, which is we need to kind of reevaluate our whole livestock model. And then there's also vegetarian activists, like you quote the CEO of the Vegetarian Society, who's just like, wouldn't it just be easier to just stop eating meat altogether? Can you give us kind of a summary of where these different groups are pointing when it comes to this potential solution?
I think there is a split between the sort of animal rights groups and the environmental groups. The animal rights groups, do seem to be in favor of at least seeing how this develops, of trying to help it develop, because their ultimate ambition is to reduce animal suffering. So lab-grown meat obviously can offer the potential of ending the death of an animal. So you can understand why they might be in favor. For the environmental groups, it's a little bit of a dilemma, so they're treading carefully. You mentioned Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth and other groups. They have yet, I haven't seen any that have come out in support of lab-grown meat. And their essential point is that you're not tackling, it's a techno fix, basically. You're not tackling the root cause of the problem, which is eating meat, and that it would be much simpler to switch to a vegetarian diet and to cut down meat consumption rather than trying to find some kind of fix where we can carry on eating as much meat as we want. And you kind of look at lab-grown meat and think, is this going to encourage sustainable behavior, or is this going to just continue entrenched unsustainable consumption habits? And they kind of think that it's going to cause the latter rather than the former.
Yeah, I think the vegetarian perspective on trying to dissuade the human race to stop eating animals is a Sisyphean task, to say the least. They need to stick by their principles, but I think that the solutions are, I think they're manifold. There's not going to be some silver bullet where we just all stop eating animals. I can't help but think of my nephew, who over Thanksgiving was asked in school what he was thankful for, and he said he was thankful for animals because we can watch them and study them and they're delicious.
But I mean, they may make the point that even if they could reduce meat consumption slightly, they may negate a proportion of animals' deaths.
Fair enough. What about the health issue? We in the U.S. we have a rampant obesity and diabetes, and a lot of that is from the enormous amount of meat that is in the average American's diet. Would this lab-grown beef help to solve this problem at all, or would it only bolster it, do you think, Tom?
It's difficult to answer that at the moment. I mean, the argument that that the supporters of lab-grown meat would say is that you could potentially create a lab-grown meat product that is healthier. You could take out some of the fats and put in some positive nutrients, you know, healthy nutrients, whatever you want to call them. So maybe there's potential for us to eat meat without the negative side effects. But I'm not sure whether that's kind of idealistic at the moment. And at the moment, that's idealistic kind of thinking. If you look at it now, you'd think that it's just actually going to encourage us to continue eating meat rather than to cut meat consumption down to perhaps more sustainable levels for both the environment and our own health. There is another point, which is, well, that at the moment, the meat being developed is processed meat. It's not the kind of high quality steaks. It's the kind of cheap processed meat that is being associated with a number of diseases.
The researchers are speculating that this lab-grown meat would be very affordable. And then from an ethical standpoint, who do you think is going to be buying this? Will it be the quote-unquote protein for the poor, or would this be something that would be more attractive to, especially when you consider that it could be healthier, and if it can taste just as good, it might be more expensive. Would this be kind of the purview of the wealthy, Tom?
I think the researchers behind this would like to imagine that everyone will eat this, that it will bring in new meat eaters. It will bring in people who might have been unwilling to be vegetarian, but will now be able to eat meat with a lower impact. In reality, I think wealthy people will still want to eat, if they can afford it, traditional grass-reared, free-range meat. So in that sense, it's more likely that this will be a cheap processed meat product for people who can't afford the real version, the traditional meat product.
Well, his article appears in the Earth Island Journal, the winter 2014 edition, with the very clever title of Brave Moo World. Food and farming journalist Tom Levitt. Tom, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Garage Mahal, Albert Collins, and Jimmy Buffett. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.